Oh, I didn't take my vitamin D today.
See?
I did eat my prunes this morning, though. So
there you go. Well, you know, you're just a regular guy.
All right. You know what? This is on Taking Pictures episode. Yep. What are we up to? 374. Okay. We're going to go back to the beginning, Jeffrey, and bring up some news.
Is it the bear falling out of the tree?
No. I want your take on this colorized Avedon photo. Did you hear about this nonsense?
Oh, no. I did hear about a colorized Moonrise Hernandez that was at APAD in New York that apparently the Ansel Adams Foundation is not happy about.
Yes. Yes, that's what I was. What did I say?
Avedon.
I said Avedon because there's an Avedon documentary and I was staring at that on my thing. But we'll get to that in a minute.
Wait, okay. I only know, what was it, Shadows and Light? That's the one I've seen.
Ron Howard made an Avedon documentary that was at Cannes this year.
Really?
And so far, as I know, no one's picked it up to distribute, but I'm sure somebody will.
You want to go in on it?
You and me? I got a check from the U.S. Treasury for $54 out of some sort of refund.
Ron,
or something.
Will you take a check?
$54. It's good. Yeah. The U.S. Well, it might be good. The U.S. Treasury is backing it.
Well,
heyo.
Wait a minute.
Okay, so yes, Ansel Adams.
Ansel Adams. Okay.
What do you think?
I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think it dismisses. Okay. First of all, this has always been my take.
Yep.
So this is not anything new. I think Ansel Adams was an okay photographer. I think he was a masterful technician.
Sure.
I think he took a mediocre negative and turned it into something incredible. Right.
Yep.
So putting up this AI version of a colorized Moonrise Hernandez, which is arguably one of his most famous photographs.
Yep.
It dismisses that expertise, in my opinion. It relegates to, you know, all of that craft and precision and years of watching light and waiting for light and seeing what light does and becoming sort of a connoisseur of light.
Yep.
It renders that completely irrelevant with a push of a button.
And
in my opinion.
And the different prints he made over his lifetime and how different they looked of the same negative. It's really weird. Here's my questions. According to was it Danziger, whoever did the gallery that did this, his pictures are in the public domain. Is that true?
I would be shocked. I mean, unless that was by design on his part. I would be shocked if they were. I don't know, but I would be shocked if they were in the public domain.
It is the public domain. But even if it is, man, that just seems wrong.
Well, yeah. I mean, it goes, and we've referenced this probably hundreds of times. It's the Jurassic Park. You know, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
we watched that, by the way, on Saturday night. Was Jurassic
Park. Oh, really? The original?
And the entire time that I'm watching it, the original. All of the Jeff Goldblum little monologues that he gives in there.
Yeah.
All of them could apply to AI stuff now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like every single one of them. And so it's really interesting. It was almost as if it wasn't, the genetic revolution hasn't happened the way that they expected it would have in 1993.
Yet. Yeah, right. Right.
But I think that other things have and they're use the same thought processes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm looking at this photograph, this image. And one of the other bummers about it is, if I'm being honest, this is a mediocre reinterpretation of that photograph. It doesn't have, in my opinion, it doesn't have the drama. Nope. It doesn't have the character. It doesn't have the visual sort of gravitas of the original.
I don't think it looks good in color.
No. Why?
It takes away, that photograph is made for black and white. It's not actually interesting in color.
Well, that's the thing, right? It just looks like a mediocre kind of
snapshot. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, to my knowledge, They didn't ask for permission. They just kind of did it. Which, yeah. Okay, if you have to ask for permission, if Weird Al has to ask your permission to parody your song,
yep.
Why wouldn't you have to, at least as a courtesy, reach out to the Adams Foundation or whatever it's called? I don't know if it's called the Ansel Adams Foundation, but why wouldn't you have to at least reach out to them and go, hey, we've got this idea. Give us a gut check. What do you think on this?
Yeah. And I don't think that they didn't ask. However, they did hire lawyers to find out whether it was in the public domain. So I just happened to click on the Wikipedia entry of the photograph.
Yeah.
And in the permission section of the summary, it said the photograph was created in 1941. It was first published in 1942 when Adams gave a print to the Museum of Modern Art, and it was published in U.S. Camera in 1943. Copyright, mm-hmm. This according to the laws of the time, copyright would therefore have to have been renewed in 1968, 1969, or 1970. A search of the 68, 69, and 1970 copyright catalogs and the Stanford Copyright Renewals Database found no relevant entries, neither for Moonrise nor U.S. Camera. And so therefore, like, basically by default, it fell into the public domain because they didn't file paperwork.
So then doesn't it feel like this was intentional then, right? Like we can skirt the system on this one over a technicality.
Or I'm going to be even more cynical.
Yeah. Okay.
The gallery just, they wanted the argument.
Oh, they wanted the bluster around it.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
Which is even more sad to some extent.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, yeah. As part of James Danziger's response that came out yesterday, quote, as anyone who is familiar with my 50-year career in photography would know, I have always stood up for photographers' rights. I've publicly defended photographers whose work was found to be illegally appropriated and spoken at legal forums on the subject of appropriation, taking the side of photographers whose work was unfairly copied, but also understand the nuances involved in the subject. Given both the public domain status of Moonrise and the transformative nature of my exercise, it was clear that I had the right to create a new work. Public domains have long served as foundations for reinterpretations, experimentation, new creative dialogue across generations of artists. Yes, but you know what? You were selling on his name.
Yeah.
And I love this idea that they said stuff like in here that it took years for them to get the color right. It involved extensive human intervention, editing, proofing, refining over many months.
Oh, come
and it's
on.
Like
come
no,
on.
It's just it's not even good. Many months of looking at it once a day, once a month for six
Come
months,
on.
You know?
Yeah. Look, David Hasselhoff could remake a Beatles tune, but is it worth it?
It feels icky.
Yeah, it does.
It just feels icky. And you know, in a time when so much of these creative arts are being sort of filed down on the edges.
Yeah.
By people, for someone who supposedly, you know, runs this gallery and has all this love for these people who make this stuff to do this, just feels really tone deaf.
You know what? It feels like Getty licensing public domain images.
Yes, that's exactly what it feels like. Like, technically, yes, it's legal what you're doing, but it's not right.
It still feels icky. Yeah.
Yeah. What's legal and what's right are not the same thing.
Yeah, 100% agree. This just it feels so blatantly opportunistic. Because we're not talking about the discussion is not around the art of it. The discussion is around the intent or the legality of it.
Yes. Although the art of it is tacky.
Yeah.
Although the art of it sucks too.
Yeah, it does.
Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in.
Yeah, that's a Well, and if it's deemed what did he call it? An exercise? Experiment?
Exercise, I think is exercise. The term he used.
If the exercise is a success, in quotes, doesn't that open the floodgates for other people to just Are we going to start seeing colorized versions of Dorothea Lange and Walker Evans?
Yeah,
and
somebody, like, I don't know if it was, what's his name? Obama's photographer. What's that guy's name?
Jesus. Yeah. And,
man, we're getting so old. Anyway.
I know.
That guy apparently helped the Adams Foundation come up with their response.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he, it was either he or somebody on the thread that he posted it on who said that it was, who's the guy? Richard Prince. Is that the guy who did the,
Yes.
It's the same kind of thing where it's like, yeah, you could take that down and yeah, you made it bigger. So you transformed it. So therefore it's yours. But like, it's still somebody else's stupid picture. Like, what are you doing? Like, as a mental artistic exercise, sure, let's sit around and discuss it after dinner, like with a glass of wine or whatever, but not actually do it and make money off it.
Right.
It's just a, it's a jerk move. To my knowledge,
there was no, like, okay. I could almost even see it if they had done it and then had a hosted a series of panel discussions or talks around. What do we think about this? What do we think about this as a practice? What do we think about this as, you know, let's have some context and some discussion around it rather than just releasing it and letting the discussion build up. I don't know. It just like you, I keep coming back. It feels icky. You're right. It really does.
It's so funny. On the Danziger website, it says underneath the picture, the statement is there, the picture is there, and then there's the press release. Underneath the picture, the caption says, AI generated from the prompt, quote, make a realistic color version of Ansel Adams' iconic moonrise over Hernandez, end quote. That was your creative input.
Right. Not the dozens or hundreds of hours that he spent in the darkroom.
Make a realistic color version of is basically all he did.
Yeah.
It's just stupid. And you know, I'm going out to New Mexico this weekend.
Yeah.
And I was actually going to take a drive up that way. Now I don't want to.
Now you're just bitter. You're like, I don't even want to be there. Well, nah, you've ruined it for me, Danziger.
Kind of. I don't know, in a small way, you know? Anyway, that's that. Yes, Ron Howard has an Avedon documentary coming out, which I'm very excited about.
Is there a trailer or anything yet? Or have they?
I haven't seen a trailer, but there may be one. We'll have to, let me see if I can find one for the.
I mean, if we're going to invest, we at least need to see what I'm buying, you know? If Ron, if you could just send that over to us, that'd be great.
Let's see. No, that's Darkness and Light.
Could you imagine if we opened podcast at On Taking Pictures, the email, and there's like an email from Ron Howard. Hey, listen to the show.
He's like, let's talk. He's like, let's have lunch.
Right.
I walked by Ron Howard a couple of years ago in Chelsea, by the Flatiron building.
Was he solo?
He was all alone. He had his mustache and a little cap on.
Yeah.
I mean, he was Ron Howard. The thing is that Ron Howard is probably, you know, memorable enough that people our age and older would be like, oh my God, it's Ron Howard. But they're not going to bother him. But there was a time in his life that guy would have been mobbed by people.
Oh, yeah. Couldn't have walked down the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think it's kind of nice that a guy at that level could walk down. I mean, I bet you, you know, Spielberg could walk down the street too, probably. How many people really know what Steven Spielberg looks like? And
you know, when you saw Jobs, was it at the Moscone Center or what? No, it was Apple Store.
At the Apple Store in Soho. Yeah. Yeah. And was then he walked by me and bumped into my shoulder.
Yeah. Was anybody bothering him on the street?
At the Apple Store, people were kind of going up to him, but like not a huge group of them, just, you know, one at a time who built up their muster. They're like, you can do it. You can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You got this. You got this. Yeah. Paying their respects. Yeah.
I doubt that he was nice to them.
Yeah. Probably.
That guy seemed like he'd be a jerk, but.
You never know. I mean, it seems like Jobs was one of those people who you kind of didn't know who you were going to get at the time.
True. True. Absolutely true. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So here's my idea that I wanted to run by you.
Yes.
You
want to colorize?
I was thinking of colorizing a picture by Mansell Madams. Here's my question. Sometimes, even though I've done what I do for so long.
Yes.
And I've never, at least in the last, you know, 20 years, gone into a situation that I was doing work and taking pictures and completely tanked, you know, like face in the sand, falling down. I did not get the picture I needed to get kind of situation.
like come away with nothing or just come away with something that you're not real happy with? What degree
come
of
come away with nothing?
We,
like ooh, okay. Really, really failed, right? You know, okay. And I think we're all scared, or at least, okay, this is my question. When you, I know you're sort of off your painting thing at the moment.
Yeah, for the foreseeable future.
But
yeah.
Let's just, for the sake of argument, back up 6 months.
Yep. Okay.
When you pull out a brand new canvas, mm-hmm. are you worried that it's going to be so bad that it's embarrassing and you're going to want to burn it?
Every time.
Okay. And it rarely is that bad. I mean, only like 60, 70% of the time for you.
Right? Yeah, right. I've read this from writers. I've read about it from musicians and certainly painters. I don't know that I've read about it from photographers, because it feels like a different kind of procedural medium or a process medium, but
you always get something, whether or not it's good.
Yes, because there's always something there that you are attempting to capture, record, sure. document, whatever it is. There's sure. always something there, right? Sure. Whereas when you're starting with a blank page or a blank canvas or a blank, what do you call the music notes, sheets? What do you call those?
Manuscript paper.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you're adding from nothing. And I think from what I've read, and this has been true in my life too, everything goes through a phase where you hate it. Before, like, you have to hate it,
right.
And then you keep trust. You know, that's where they say kind of trust the process, sure. trust the process. And then it comes out, whatever it is. I sometimes still hate it. In fact, often I still don't like, maybe hate's a strong word, but I am often
disappointed
or, you know, not really pleased with how something has turned out. And I think that's one of the things that you come up against time and time again. I'm surprised to hear that from you, given your level of proficiency and the time that you've put in.
Well, okay. So give me like 20 seconds and just say,
yeah,
yes, it is an iterative process, but sometimes mm-hmm. you go in and you're setting up lights and you're trying to get the ratios right. And you're losing the person's, you know, maybe the light is changing, the sun is going down or whatever. You're trying to get the person's attention. Oh, crap, there's, you know, the tie is backwards. Fix the tie. Oh, now the lights, you know what I mean? Oh, we have 3 minutes because, you know, this person has to leave. Like, there are these sort of time crunch situations, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And you need to have something of a certain level of quality in order to deliver. Mm-hmm. And there sometimes is a fear where, yeah, your first shot is rarely, you know, the one, as it were, just because, you know, I will tell you that there are times when I will panic on a shoot.
Really?
Yeah. Like in
Even
my,
now.
I mean, wow. not, well, and so here's my question. If it's true of you and it's true of me, does Steven Spielberg feel that way? Do you ever get over
so.
That?
I don't think you do. And I think that's what makes you good. Because I think if you, or it's partially what makes you good. If you go into the situation with the attitude of, you know what, I've got 37 years of this under my belt, and I know how to make a good film or a good photo or,
sure.
you know, Hans Zimmer, does he ever
Which is technically true, which is most likely true. It's very rare. It's very low probability that Hans Zimmer is not going to write music that is at least passably good as music for a movie.
Yes. But you and Steven, in this example,
yeah.
are dealing with variables, as you just mentioned, that are beyond your control. The attention of your subject, fading light, maybe you only have the location for 20 minutes.
Or that's the location sucks. Here, we've put you in this conference room. We think this is a really great place to shoot these pictures.
Or the, what was the shoot that you did, like in the basement of the museum with no light? And you're like, how do we do this shooting at, you know, 27,000 ISO?
It was actually on the fourth floor of MoMA, but yes, it had no light. But yeah.
I think you are dealing with things that are beyond your control so often that I don't know how you could go into a situation thinking, yeah, I'm going to nail this.
Yeah.
Every time.
It's always scary.
Yeah.
I mean, once I get set up and I have my lights set up and I'm taking pictures and I look at the back of the camera and I go, okay, that is a picture of that person. They're relatively well lit. Nothing's blown out. Nothing's what, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that is a picture. That is a picture of that person in this space with my lights and everything's working. Okay. Now we can start. From there on in, usually I don't, the nerves disappear, but sometimes getting to that point takes longer than others. And you wonder whether or not you're ever going to get there. You know, It's like, that doesn't work. Now move the light over there. No, that's not right. You know, but of course, you know, time's ticking away, assistant people, PR people, maybe, you know, the subject, whatever, like all that thing's happening. And then there's also a confidence thing in the room of,
oh, absolutely.
You want to put on this air of, oh, every single one of these pictures is amazing. Just let me do my job. All while, crap, the sink isn't working on this flash unit right now. Or,
and you don't want your subject to go, this guy? Really?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, great. My 35 is doing that weird thing where it doesn't quite focus correctly, you know, or whatever.
Right.
I was wondering that I wrote it down in my thing is, do you ever get past the possibility of complete failure? And should you?
I think complete failure is a kind of a non-starter or a misnomer, because you know you're not going to fail completely, barring hardware failure, barring your camera just, you know, shitting the bed and not working. You will come up with something.
And if that happens, you get your phone out and you get a shot, you know?
Yeah. But I think you and I are similar in the way that we inflate the possibility for abject failure.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah. It's true. True. And you know, I have one other addendum on here, which is getting lost and chasing your tail, which is another thing that happens creatively where you're doing something and it's a thing, but it's not the thing you're looking for. But the more you try to change things, you kind of sometimes end up back where you started. I spent the last couple of weeks, I ended up finishing that little short version of my movie that I shot a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay. At the diner. Yeah. Great. Yeah.
And I'll
still, you know, haven't seen it though.
Oh, it's you can download it. I can send you a link.
Yes, please.
It's on Vimeo. I will put a link in the show notes. But I spent a lot of time. This was a Blackmagic 6K Pixis Blackmagic RAW footage. We had lights that were tungsten, you know, 3200 theoretically, you know, but they're LEDs. They're a little spiky in the spectrum. We had the camera set to 3200, but of course we're shooting RAW. We could change that later, but you know, that gets us in the ballpark. And then you come home and then you're in DaVinci Resolve and, you know, I'm doing color space transforms over to DaVinci wide gamut intermediate color space. And then I'm correcting by putting in a linear node and playing with, you know, I mean, I'm doing all the things that you're supposed to do, you know. And I'm getting an image that looks pretty good, but the cut was done, the audio was done, and the color was quote unquote done. But then I kept, you know, reading or learning new things and being like, oh, maybe that's a better way to get these two shots to match. And I'd go back and I'd create a new version of the timeline and I'd wipe out all the color and I'd start from scratch and I'd end up somewhere and I'd be like, oh, maybe it needs to be a little warmer. And then I find myself going from node to node, sort of chasing. I cool it down in one thing and I warm it up in another and I, you know, and I add grain here and I do more noise reduction over there. And in the end, I don't know that I'm tacking smaller tacks to get closer to my goal or if I'm just going wildly like speed wobbles on a skateboard going into nothingness, you know?
Are you just iterating on noise rather than getting more signal? Yeah. Yeah. That's tough.
Do you ever feel that way?
All the time.
Okay.
More in my writing than anything else at the moment.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I'll chase an idea down and, you know, to me, it just ends up as this weird word salad, you know, and you go, that's not at all what I was trying
to say. That's not my idea.
That's not it. What is it? You know, do you find yourself going through this kind of sort of tail chasing more on the video side because it's it's newer relative to what you've gone through on the photography side?
That is a good question. Like, do I just, is it just an experience that's leading
me
here?
You know how to get it right in a still. You know that. You know that, Bill, in your heart of heart.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You know how to get it right in stills. So are you comparing to yourself? Are you saying, well, I can do this in a still situation. I should be able to do this in a moving image situation.
Yeah, I have a harder time moving image, especially color. I have a much harder time knowing where I am in the process, you know, or knowing what I'm imagining, what I'm going for, and knowing the right way to get there, or knowing where I may know where I want to go, but I don't know where I am, you know? It's very much like I'm traveling with my eyes closed when I'm doing that stuff. And it's
can I take you back for a sec?
Sure.
When you look back at something like Drabbles,
sure,
right, which was, you know, arguably a very big milestone for you, right?
So 18 years ago,
do you see or do you remember the same kinds of struggle from picture to picture, knowing that they were part of a loose series, as you do going from scene to scene in your film? Do you know what I'm trying to get to?
Yes. I don't know whether I was more confident then, or I was just dumb, like, you know, Dunning-Kruger effect kind of thing back then.
Yeah.
I look at those now and I think, oh man, that's soft. I never would have allowed that image. You know, that wouldn't be the finished image. Like, I would not be happy with that now. But I was good with them back then. Yeah, I mean, my discernment is much higher now. Things have to be things have to be much more correct or perfect than I used to think they had to be.
For me to
be satisfied with them technically.
Do you think you're the only one that gets stuck there, or do you have any point of reference for viewers who've looked at those images, that body of work? Do they notice the same things you do, or have you become more critical of them?
I guess it depends who you're talking to, but I will say this. When I look at the people that I highly respect and their work, it looks more like the stuff I'd put out now than the stuff I was putting out then, as far as technical quality. Like, ultimately, that is what I was chasing, and I'm better at getting there now.
Yeah.
So in 18 years, I will, you know, if we're still here, in 18 years, I'll be really good at coloring things.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to me that people, like, getting skin tones right on video and film, it's so weird because, you know, there's scopes and skin tone lines and trying to get, you know, the green, magenta, yellow, blue sort of, you know, all of these things kind of just sit in the right place where it feels right. But then you watch them, you know, any movie USA that you would put on, and the skin tones are all over the place because people, like, creatively push these things in all kinds of directions.
Yeah, yeah.
So why am I trying to get something? I want to get it right because I don't want to look like an amateur. And yet the people who are professionals are shifting them out of right as a point of fact.
Yeah. Yeah. I was watching an interview with Michael Biehn. Do you know Michael Biehn?
Sure.
From Aliens and Tombstone. And he was talking about
The Abyss.
The Abyss, great. He was talking about Tombstone, and there's a shot of him. It's one of his pivotal scenes where he's drunk in the streets, and he's like, I want your blood, you know, that whole speech. And, you know, it's a fantastic speech in the movie. It's a great scene. But he said the focus puller screwed up, and he's like, I'm soft.
Yep.
And we couldn't do it again. I did it, like, that was the best one. And I'm soft.
Yep.
And he's, like, held on to that all these years. But I don't, as a viewer, like, and Tombstone is one of my favorite Westerns. I don't I didn't notice it until he said it, and I went back and watched the scene.
Now you can't watch it again. Now it drives you crazy.
Yeah, and it's you know, it's a little soft, and I would imagine that that softness is more prominent on a 4K or a Blu-ray than it was on VHS or even DVD.
I used to, you know, when we watched Jurassic Park the other day, there's a couple shots, like when they're all sitting around the table having lunch, you know, their sea bass, and Goldblum gives his like speech about how, you know, you didn't take enough time thinking that you should, or, you know, Laura Dern does the whole, like, you have plants here that are poisonous and they'll defend themselves violently if necessary or whatever.
Right.
And then they cut to Grant and he's like, what do you think? You're, you know, all of the, and he's just like, I don't know. We've all been thrown into this thing. And it's a slow push into him. It's out of focus the entire time.
Huh.
And I saw that movie, what, 3 times in the theater? I've seen that movie 25 times in my life. You know.
So could you make the case that it was the focus puller? Or was it focus breathing in the lens as it was in focus?
It was the focus puller.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think it was at a time where the best they had to know that they were in focus was maybe like a tap off of the film, but it was on film.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They were doing measurement. That's back in the days when they were, like, you know, still measuring everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and just the guy missed it on that shot. And there are shots in my little thing that are out of focus, or, you know, either like the focus got missed or whatever. There's a couple of shots that I didn't use because the focus was off enough that it drove me crazy. But.
Okay. So let me ask you a question.
Obviously Steven Spielberg's fine with it, but if you watch The Post or you watch Bridge of Spies or you watch any modern Spielberg movie, we watched Lincoln a week and a half ago.
Which is phenomenal.
Yeah. But there's no missed focus in, or certainly not like there used to be in the film days, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, go ahead.
Do you find yourself getting more hung up on the technical aspects of your photography and now your filmmaking versus the emotional resonance? Like, what would you rather have? A scene that really lands that might be poorly lit or slightly soft, or a technically perfect scene, but the delivery is not quite right. The dialogue.
I will tell you that is for me, I would take a 90% performance if it's technically right versus a 95% performance if it was noticeably soft.
Yeah.
Like, that distracts me enough that it takes me out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I watched, remember that movie Columbus that we watched years ago? The one about the architecture.
Yeah, architecture. What's the guy? Harold and Kumar, that guy.
That guy, John Cho.
John Cho.
But the guy who made it, Masumoto or something like that, Japanese dude.
Beautiful film, by the way.
Beautiful movie. If you haven't seen it, watch it. Mm-hmm. But I watched that again the other day, and it's like, you know, there's a few shots that are missed focus, right? Like, you know, I mean, this happens. It's not like I am very concerned about the things that I make looking amateur.
Mm.
You know?
As a reflection on the work itself, or as a larger reflection on you not knowing what you're doing? Like, where do you hang up on that?
My nightmare scenario is that somebody sees the thing that I made and they go, yeah, that's pretty good, but it looks like a bunch of kids did it. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's what I worry about.
Mm.
Now, I've sent a cut of this to editor friends of mine. I've sent it to the actors, and everyone's come back and said, wow, the editing is really good. So, like, your question was, you know, the technical aspects versus the artistic aspects.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I want artistically. I know, I mean, I'm not, you know, Schumacher or something like that, but I know I can edit.
Mm-hmm.
Better than your average person, I think. I understand the rhythm of it. I understand all of that. I'm less worried about that and more worried about, crap, that shot is out of focus, or I can't get that color right. And having it look like a student film and not like something you would see on a streaming channel.
Yeah.
And the thing is, though, I know people who make films, and sometimes I'll look at, you know, some woman or guy that I know who made a film, and, you know, and I'll watch it and I'll be like, ah, that doesn't look right. You know, it bothers me. It just doesn't feel like the other thing that's hard is getting the brightness right on a film. You know what I mean? Like these two people in my little scene are in a diner.
Yeah.
And it's at night. So there's like the light in the room. Now, it could be really like low light, almost like they're almost in shadow the whole time if I really wanted to play it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I chose to go somewhere in the middle, but I opened up.
You change the feel of it, though. You're not looking to shoot a noir film, to my knowledge.
No, but I'm also not trying to shoot something that's super flatly lit and looks like a cartoon and has do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, like music on it either.
Yeah.
Like there's a serious conversation going on. It's flirty at times.
Did you have a mood board of any kind when you were planning this out? Like, you know, I want it to be like, you know, this, I want it to look like this scene from this movie, well, or I like the way this director, or I like Greg Fraser's, you know, skills as a DP.
I didn't go that deep into trying to actually like choose stuff. Although it's funny, when I was coloring, there were times that I would grab shots from, say, The Holdovers, and I'll be like, how did they get, you know, I never noticed the colors of the skin being weird in that, but if you bring them in and stick them next to something, they're really weird. You know what I mean? They're not correct, you know?
Is that the one with Alfred Molina, the new one?
No, it's not Alfred Molina.
Oh, not the Burrows. I'm thinking about the Burrows.
Yeah,
the
Holdovers. No. Holdovers is the one at the school with... But the one thing that I did pull up was, you know, the scene, Beautiful Girls? You know that scene, movie? Beautiful Girls. Great movie. Ted Demme, who did Blow, and he did this movie. He died of a heart attack.
Beautiful Girls.
Beautiful Girls is a great movie. It's got let me list off the cast just so you have some idea.
Yeah.
Matt Dillon, Natalie Portman, Uma Thurman, Timothy Hutton, Michael Rapaport, Mira Savino, Rosie O'Donnell, Martha Plimpton, Lauren Holly, Annabeth Gish.
Like every 90s actor and actress.
All of them.
Wow.
Why
have I not seen this?
And it is one of my favorite. Natalie Portman plays like a 14-year-old neighbor of Timothy Hutton who goes home because his mom died to see his like dad and brother. And it's like a reunion is happening. And he just starts chatting up like the next door neighbor, and they just have like these, you know, cute, witty repartees. Not any like, there's nothing sexual happens between them, but like you could tell that they kind of fall for each other, you know, just like talking, you know. And he's it's like all of his friends are in town, and it's like, and all the things that they get up to and stuff. It's a beautiful movie, but there's a scene in it where Timothy Hutton is sitting with Noah Emmerich. You know that guy. He plays the FBI agent in The Americans.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
that guy?
Yeah. Also in
Miracle Truman Show.
Truman Show. Yeah.
That guy. So he's sitting with that guy. It's like after a party, they're leaning against a pool table in like an empty VFW hall, and there's this like camera move across. Now I did not do any like major camera moves in my quick thing that I did at the diner, but ultimately I want to do some camera moves in a lot of my shots, but it's like just them sitting, you know, with beers in their hands, kind of drunk, talking about stuff. And it's a 2-minute scene or whatever it is. And so that it's that kind of feel that I was trying to get in my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would pull that in and it's like, man, that's really dark. Now, if you stick it on a screen, it doesn't feel, you know, it's one of these things where again, lost. You know what I mean? Like, this is maybe that classic thing about, you know, your taste and your abilities not matching up or whatever. But it's like, I need to do this a lot more to get confident at it. If that makes sense.
And no, it absolutely does.
The problem
is now,
yeah.
Know that you're also benchmarking
myself against
yourself.
Yes. And yes. And against some of the best, you know, I'm looking at films made by absolute masters and saying your first thing you ever make has to be as good as all of this stuff. And it's like, well, that's insane.
Yeah. It's like making, you know, you can't do that. You can't compare No.
But I want it to be as close as I can get it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't that the thing?
Yes, but also this scene that you shot is by its very nature a work in progress. This is the place where you get to work that out.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. But it's also the reason why I did this scene is to try to get a few more people to give me some funding.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also this ulterior thing of like, yeah, I understand that's my first thing. And yes, you and I can sit here and say, well, it's you know, you haven't done one of these in a while. You're just, you know, you're getting your feet underneath you. You know, if you do 20 days of this, you're going to get better at it. All of that's true. But in the meantime, I have to have something that looks good enough that somebody says, oh yeah, I'll give you $10,000-$20,000.
Yeah. I'm curious, did you happen to act as your own sort of set photographer while you were doing this? Did you shoot stills on set while you were filming, or were you locked in on directing?
Oh, I was just directing. I mean, yeah. Was I on the film camera or?
Yeah, just as sort of a set photographer. I'm curious whether if you had shot stills, would you judge the stills as harshly as you're judging the video?
Well, I wouldn't. Yeah, I wouldn't have lit it the way I did if I was shooting stills.
Hmm.
That's the other thing, man. A lot of stuff you can get away with a lot more in moving images than you can in still images.
Yeah, sure.
Like, things don't need to be as polished.
You know, you're looking at them at a 24th of a second.
Yeah, but I mean, you could have like weird shadows on people's faces and stuff, and no one cares if they're moving.
Hmm.
In a way that if I shot a still of somebody, it's like, man, I never would have lit that hard over there, or, you know, had that deep of a shadow or whatever. It's a really interesting thing. It's just, I keep coming back to this, like getting lost and chasing your tail thing. It's just, it's like I finish and I'm happy with it. And then I go, could it be better? And I go back 5 steps and I redo it. And the final thing I come up with isn't that far from the thing I came up with the last time, even though I came at it from a completely different.
Or the first thing that you had that you thought you needed to fix.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, wait, do I even know what I want at this point? It's very frustrating.
What is this? What has this process so far? What kind of effect has it had on your photography? Are you missing stills more, or are you kind of fired up by not knowing as much and want to dive into the video side of it more and leave the stills behind for a little while?
Well,
are you thinking about those terms?
I had a friend in town this weekend from my music school days.
Mm-hmm.
He and I and Conrad went to MoMA the other day, and then we went to the Morgan Library, and then we went to the Met yesterday. And we were walking around the 19th century European stuff at the Met. And I saw this Degas that I had seen in the Degas Manet exhibit,
mm-hmm.
Which is like of all these, it's like the left-hand side of the frame is all flowers. And it's just like this older woman over on the right corner.
Have you got an image handy?
Yeah, I'll see if I can find it.
If you even find it.
And right next to it was a Degas where it was just sort of a person standing nicely lit. Okay, yeah, here it is. A woman standing nicely lit. It would be more the kind of picture I would normally take. You know, would be the first one. And I'm sending you here a link to the second one in your text here. Hopefully, it comes up as the right place.
Oh yeah, got it.
Okay, so it's like this giant, for those who can't see, I'll put a link in the show notes if I can. It's this, you know, medium-sized, large frame, and it's just this giant bouquet of flowers on a table. And the woman is off to the right, like kind of half cut off, like her, left shoulder is out of frame, mm-hmm. and she's leaning. And I look at this, and this is not a composition I would ever choose to make.
Right.
It's just not the way I shoot photographs. I just wouldn't think to do this. I have a couple of times. There's a picture I took in 2017 or 2018 of a guy at a piano where I kind of stuck his head on the piano keys and then I shot from above.
Hmm.
I took this weird picture. And it's the closest thing I came to something like this. And I really like that image, actually. I'm going to see if I can just, yep, here we go. I'll send this to you, Jeffrey. This is like the closest I've come to a picture like this, right? And I really like this picture of this guy on the piano, and it's very un-me in a lot of ways. I think that I need to, so in answer to your question.
I love this. I love the tension you made here.
Yeah, I think it's a really strong photograph.
Yeah.
And I like all the crap and the paper in the piano.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know,
and you can see that this, you know, this could be a piano at some little club or bar that's been there forever.
Yep.
And he's just the latest steward of this piano.
And it was just, this was at a practice rooms because he played piano for dance people. And it was well lit in the room. I bounced a flash off the wall that was next to the piano to the right.
Yeah, it's cool.
And then, so I took this picture and I like this picture.
Yeah. Could you include this in the notes as well, please?
Sure. I had an idea for this picture. When I originally, walked in to shoot this. I knew what I wanted to get in this picture.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I usually walk in and come up with the picture when I get there. So the reason I bring all this up is to say, to answer your question, when I was there yesterday, I was looking at this Degas of this woman next to the flowers. I said, I need to take more pictures like that are weird and off kilter, because that's something I normally don't do.
Right. Not the standard sort of Bill Wadman photo, which you have, I don't want to say you've perfected it, but you have gotten to a place where your hit rate is so high that I would imagine it loses some interest. Excitement for you.
Yep. And it's nice being competent at that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do people want pictures like these? I don't know. It doesn't, I don't, at this point, I'm really getting to the point where I don't give a crap whether people like it or not. I want to do stuff that I want to like.
Well, I mean, this is one of the big reasons I've kind of taken a step back myself, you know, is the idea that it's not satisfying in the way that it was.
Yeah.
You know? What did I write? I came up with this thing. What did I say?
I saw something. What did I see?
The thing, what is it? You have to like, it was something like you have to get up to break down. sometimes the thing you're skilled at needs to be broken a little before it can surprise you again.
Yeah. Ooh, who said that?
I said that.
Oh, wow. That's a good line.
Thanks.
That's good.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. And I think I think that there is a sometimes you get too good at things and you have to do something that's bad in order to build back up. It's like you have to change the exercise you're doing at the gym because your muscles get used to it.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And so in answer to your question, I have been uninterested in stills lately.
Back up for a second. That's a strong word. Not less interested. Not, I mean, you heard it, kids. Uninterested.
Yes.
That's a really strong statement from you whose identity has been built around making images.
Well, how deep do we want to go? I've been largely uninterested in anything lately, but
same. Yeah.
But, I've been specifically uninterested in stills. I mean, if somebody's hiring me,
I need to sit with this for a second, because that's a really big realization.
There's part of me that feels as if I've done all the things that I've really kind of wanted to do here that I can think of. I mean, I could keep going.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
But why bother? You know,
I get it. I mean,
I'm depressed, so don't listen to me.
No. I get it. I in a moment of maybe serendipity, do you remember Masterclass? We had them as a sponsor way back when.
It turns out my wife is subscribed to Masterclass.
Well, they had a flash special, flash sale yesterday that they've extended to today,
okay,
which will be expired by tomorrow you know, when many of you will listen to this, so don't worry about it. But 50% off. So it's $5 a month. And when you sign up, well, I don't know if this is across the board, but I signed up for the $5 a month plan that is one device, no offline viewing. And when I signed up, they said, hey, we're going to upgrade you for free for a year to the mid-level tier, two devices, offline viewing, no extra charge.
Well, I mean, it's most useful to have it on my phone. So I went on the train or something.
Yeah. So I went, okay. So I have this now, this thing, hundreds of things that some I'm interested in, some I'm not, but all of them are potential fuel for going somewhere else.
Yes.
Either creatively or just, you know, I've queued up lessons on mindfulness and yoga and, sure. and, you know, eating and healthy. So it's maybe not surprising that I have been putting out into the universe, I need to go in a different direction because what I'm doing is not doing it for me. And then the universe responds with, well, here's a bunch of stuff for you to taste. Here's a buffet of sure. of different kinds of potential inspiration. Go do that.
Yeah.
And let's see what comes out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm right there with you. I'm bored. I am frustrated. I am tense about not feeling a pull or feeling a calling toward one thing or another in particular. And I'm hoping that this may jumpstart a direction, or at least maybe jumpstart a tangent to another. Like, I don't know where it's going to go, but I have to be open to trying something else because what I'm doing right now
isn't working.
Is not working.
It, you know what I think it is?
Hmm.
Low T. It's low testosterone. That's really what it comes down to.
Is it really?
Some people actually say, yeah, it's hormonal as we get older, right? Like we just lose interest in stuff.
Am I going through menopause or something?
I think you are.
Is that what it is? Is that really a thing?
Yes.
I bet it is.
I think it is. Yeah. Yeah.
If it's not, it should.
I agree with you. It's not to say that, you know, when I had to shoot a couple weeks ago for a magazine, I got to shoot for a friend today. I've got a thing next week for a corporate thing. I'm fine getting paid to do my work, but I'm having a hard time being interested into trying something new. And, you know, and I'm trying to push myself past that by just sort of booking shoots with some friends.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, doing the video stuff the past couple weeks, it's interesting. Sometimes it makes me want to run back to stills because it's like, wait, come back here where I know how to do what I want to do.
Right.
It's like going back. It's, you know, it's like if you have a pull up bar in your house and you know, get good at it. So every time you walk by, you just kind of do a pull up or two,
yep,
you know, that
yep,
whole thing.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
You know, at a certain point, it's just sort of like, hey, the pull up bar is there. I'm just going to do a couple pull ups. And photography is kind of like that. You know, I'm walking by. It's like, oh, I can do that. Give me the camera. Snap, snap, but snap. Hey, that's pretty good. Moving on. You know,
let me ask you first of all, when did your daily project, your latest
November
daily November. Oh, has it been that long already?
Yeah, it's been 7 months.
Wow. Okay.
I have not picked up my camera in 2 weeks. Actually, no. I took the Fuji in my bag when we went to MoMA and the other museums and stuff with my friend on Sunday. Yeah. And I took two pictures.
Huh. Okay.
I don't take pictures when I'm just walking around. I just don't find that interesting. But I took a couple of pictures of him, like in a little nook at MoMA, and the camera's in front of me. I'm staring at it right now, but I haven't taken the card out of the camera.
Staring at it with contempt.
It's looking at me going, let me try to focus and fail. but there was a time at which when I got home with new pictures, I would have them on my computer instantly.
Yeah. We've talked about that. Yeah. I mean, yes.
Sure. I want to get at it. I want to like start attacking.
Let's
the thing
get
that
to
I
it.
Made.
Let's see did I get what I thought I did? And if I didn't, can I fix it?
Yeah. And now I'm just sort of like, whatever. I'll get to it eventually. Sometimes I forget that a thing is on a card and I'll like do something else and be like, oh, I remember I took those couple pictures of Jeffrey, you know, 6 weeks ago and they happen to be on this card. Oh, I never even took those off. I should probably get them off before I go deleting everything.
Was the daily project coming to an end in November?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember Did you see that as a relief? Like, oh, good, because I'm really kind of over this. I'm glad this is over. Or was there something else when you took those last photographs? Was there something else that kind of, yeah, maybe I'll do another one, maybe I won't? Or were you just kind of, I need to be done with this for a while? Do you remember?
Yes, I do remember. I was kind of glad it was over.
Yeah.
And part of me thought this might be the last one I ever do.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's another big realization.
It felt like
work, but not in a good way.
Maybe? No. It felt like I was repeating myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm right there with you.
And of course I wasn't repeating myself in the sense that I took another 365 pictures in a year that, or, you know, more than that pictures, but, you know, finished images.
Mm-hmm.
As a personal project. And I think, you know, and it's funny, I was looking through some of them. You know, what's interesting. Some of that, when you go back and you look at a series like that, you know, here's all the ones that, you took last year or whatever. And I was going through them. I noticed that I liked more of the ones of men than of women. Normally it's, you know, generally, and this is not a misogynistic statement, women look better in pictures than men do a lot of times. And a lot of times the pictures that I like are of women and I feel bad. I'm like, oh man, I'm, you know, but then I'm looking through these pictures and, you know, it's like, I just happen to have them here. So I'm sending them to Jeffrey. You know, I took this picture of my friend Randy that I really like. I took this picture of this guy, Tom, that I really like. I took this picture of, my friend Michael Cheney that I really like.
Is Tom the one in the red chair? That's a terrific picture.
Right.
That's a terrific picture. Again, getting closer to the piano shot and to the Degas.
Yes, particular one, right?
The subject is not ancillary, but the first thing you're going to see, at least for me, is the red chair.
Yes, and he's surrounded by all those paintings and stuff, right?
Yeah.
But, but I also, you know, took a lot of very Bill pictures of other people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going through them and it's like, these pictures are, you know, pretty darn nice. You know, like, if you told me 15 years ago and you showed me these pictures and you go, these are the pictures you'll be taking in 15 years. I'd be like, man, I'm pretty good 15 years from now.
Yeah. That shot with the chair is, especially when you see it just next to the one below it of the guy in the raincoat, snowcoat, whatever. Yep. They look like they were taken by two different people.
Yeah. Yeah.
No disrespect, because you know
I love you. Yeah, yeah.
The shot with the chair, I'm coming back to that again and again already. Like I want to look deep. First of all, I need to see it bigger, but I'm looking at it. There's really a lot going on here.
Yeah, I think that actually might be close to full res if you want to click around it.
Oh, okay.
It's at least 3,000 pixels. It's big enough. But yeah, I mean it's. But it's funny that
and then framing it with is that a piece of molding on the left-hand side, that scalloped edge?
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
See, sometimes I'm good at this. And it's,
yeah, that's really cool.
And I go there and, you know, it's just, it's interesting to me sometimes. I'm very rarely excited about pictures I take in a studio setting.
Yeah.
I mean, I've taken some pictures in a studio setting that I like, but I'd much rather, you know, take this picture of this film director, Keith, we went to lunch and I was like, just lean forward towards me. And I took this picture and I like this picture. You know, these are pictures that I like. I prefer when things are messy. I prefer when things are cluttered.
We get a presentation of him, you know, he's probably a little off kilter as a person. He's probably a little, you know.
Yep.
Just in a good way, like quirky.
Yep.
You know, and I think I like this. I like how it reflects that. You've got him wearing stripes that are horizontal. You've got the wainscoting in the back that's vertical. And then you've got this portrait of this woman looking out.
Yeah. But all of this was just sort of, oh, we finished lunch. Hey, let me take a picture of you before we leave. I slide over
maybe
to another
that's
table,
when you're,
snap, snap, snap.
Maybe that's when you're more engaged, when you can be more relaxed.
Yeah. Sure. But it is.
This almost looks like a painting. It's kind of fun.
that's, I mean, that's what I'm always going for, right? You know,
yeah,
ultimately.
And,
you know,
So is it a matter of medium or is it a matter of subject matter that you think could get some of this excitement back? Or are you just done with this for a while? Either way is okay. There are no wrong answers.
It's finding subjects is a pain in the neck. Yeah. I don't mind taking the pictures. I don't mind doing the work, except for the, oh, I'm going to spend 2.5 hours trying to find somebody that I can shoot today. Because it has to be somebody different every single day.
Yeah. See, and I'm kind of in a similar spot. I don't, the way I've been painting for the last many years is just not exciting for me anymore. I can get something that kind of sort of works, but, you know, as I said in this piece, I don't want kind of sort of working. I want something that excites me, that's compelling to me to make as much as it is potentially to a viewer. And I'm not getting that.
So where do you find that?
I'm taking a step back and just going into sort of input hardware mode and seeing what surfaces rather than force something to come out of doing something the same way. And maybe it's not visual. Maybe the visual stuff is not going to happen for a while. If I'm not doing something to make money, then I damn sure better enjoy it. I better get some sort of joy, excitement, enthusiasm, discovery, transformation, whatever words we need to use to describe it. I better get something out of it. And if I'm not, it's the wrong thing to do. You know, I sit here at my synths and I've been plunking around on the synths and
making,
making bleep bloop music. Cause that's what my ADHD brain loves, apparently.
Yep.
And I've been writing a lot more. I've just finished a podcast archive that you and I talked about. And, sure. And, you know, seeing all of these podcast episodes going back to 2009, 2010, there's a lot there that I've explored and it inspires me to want to keep exploring. I love talking with people probably more than I love anything else in the world right now. So why not lean into that? And not for the sake of growing an audience or getting ads or, you know, any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Just to have the experience, because that's what I love. I love the experience of talking with someone in the same way that with, is it Keith, the director here?
Yep.
In the same way that you just had this experience of having lunch with this person and go, you know what? Let me mark this occasion. Let me document this real quick.
Yep.
And you take a shot and it takes on something else. The imperfection becomes its own kind of perfection, you know?
Yeah. And trying to find somebody who's okay with doing that. A lot of people are weird.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, a photograph is forever now, right?
Yes.
Photograph is forever. It didn't used to be like, oh, this is going to get lost and end up in a drawer somewhere or a box. Somebody may find it in a thrift store 20 years hence. Nope. Now a photograph is forever. And do I want this to be me forever? Do I want to be captured like this forever? That's got to be hard for some people.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Regardless of how good, quote unquote, the photograph is, you know, as well as I do, we are often not our audience, you know, and something that you think looks fantastic that, you know, Keith may look at that and go, oh my God.
Sure.
Would you delete that?
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Whereas you're like, oh my God, this is great. Look at this.
Were people saying that back in the day?
I don't know.
1950, were people looking at a picture and said, oh God, burn that and burn the negative.
You know, I can't speak for anybody else, but I used to really enjoy having my photograph taken when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I would ham it up all the time.
Right.
Loved it. Remember that. Loved it.
I mean, but did they have to use that thing that held your head still for the 15 second exposure?
For the wet plate.
Yeah.
Action shot. Wiggle your finger. Wiggle your finger.
Sorry. Go ahead.
You know, but I didn't. The camera was a different piece of equipment then than it is now, because I didn't know as a child that there were people called photographers.
Yeah.
You know, as a really little child, you're just like, oh, smile, click, you know, and, you know, maybe you saw that photograph in an album somewhere. Maybe it just sort of disappeared into the ether. You never saw it again. you don't know.
Right.
So I think the expectation was different, at least for me. You know, fast forward 117 years, I don't like having my photograph taken.
Right.
Anymore.
Yeah.
For all sorts of reasons. But part of it, you know, is really, as I said, it's like, it's forever. You know, it may not be forever explicitly, but if it's on iCloud or it's in Google Drive or it's on some backup service, it is forever. Sure. Somebody can find it forever.
Why is that a bad thing?
Boy, I don't know. That's next week's episode. I don't know. Yeah. Why is forever a bad thing? I don't know, but it is. It is.
Yeah. People are weird about that. You know, I was, one last thing that's kind of not irking me, but I saw the other day. Do you know, Chris Burden? He's a performance artist.
No.
In 1971, he did a performance called Shoot, where he stood in a gallery space and a guy took a .22 rifle from 15 feet away and shot him in the arm.
What?
And it's documented on an 8-second 16mm film. Like, he stood there and he's like, all right, go. Bang! And it goes through his arm.
No. Why?
And he like grabs his arm.
Well, yeah, I would imagine, you know, because blood.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Okay. I will preface this with, I don't understand a lot of performance art.
Yep.
A lot of it just goes absolutely over my head. Maybe, you know, it's almost like, you know, if I ever went to a Linea, Grant Ackett's restaurant in Chicago, wasted on me. Because I don't have the palate to understand what he's doing, or, you know, bebop jazz. I don't have the ear to understand some of the out there stuff that you know, Ornette Coleman or you know, Coltrane were doing back in the day.
Yeah.
This is the same kind of thing for me. I don't understand how or why that's considered A, performance, or B, art. I don't understand. So I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
So yeah, it's apparently one of the most iconic and infamous works of the body art movement in the 70s.
Body art. Okay.
And, you know, it was originally supposed to just graze his arm, but apparently his friend missed a little bit and it went like through his arm.
Ooh.
And he wanted to, Burden said that the performance came from the common folklore and televisual motif of getting shot in the United States, whether real or faked, without knowing how it actually felt. The performance was then to feel what he only experienced visually. And additionally, themes of the Vietnam War were frequent in American television at the time of the performance.
Here, let me spoil it. What's his name?
Burden, B-U-R-D-E-N.
Mr. Burden, let me spoil this for you. It fucking hurts.
Yeah. Well, okay. He said it was like a tractor trailer clipping you off the, like on the side of the highway.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And
you know, I don't know how it feels to burn to death, but I really don't need to find out as some sort of artistic statement.
I guess my question to you is, can art go too far?
Yes.
Is this going too far? Point.
I think, well, again, I am not an academic. I am not a historian. I don't know where it fits in the, you know, larger milieu of art. But for me, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Okay.
I don't get it.
I just look at this kind of thing and it just makes my brain hurt.
Yeah.
Like, am I too much of a weird, not wussy, but like, do I not go all in and experience the way other people do?
But other people, I mean, if you asked 100 people, is getting shot in the arm art? I don't know that a lot of that, I don't think that the bell curve would swing in your favor. You know,
yeah. You know,
I don't think a lot of people go, oh, yeah, totally art. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, wait, he did what now? I think there would be a lot of
inquisitiveness. He did what now? Yeah.
Yeah. He did. He, what do you mean he got shot? Like that response. And maybe, okay, ooh, now wait a minute. Is the act itself art, or is the discussion that it provokes and inspires around the event, is that the art?
I think that it's the reaction of the people to the video he was going for, yeah. which is in itself its own, you know, kind of.
Yeah,
weird,
I don't get it. I don't get it.
Doesn't do anything for you.
No, no. I mean, I don't want to see. First of all, I don't want to see people in pain.
Yes, I think in this case, the pain was the point.
I don't know. It just seems like a different way of fetishizing violence.
Hmm. Okay. All right. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. I saw it the other day and I thought
blush.
I'd bring it
that's
up with
first,
you.
That's first blush response. It just seems a weird fetishizing of yeah. I don't know.
Interesting. All right. You know, I realized I didn't put down a photographer of the week. You got anybody that's
one.
Interesting?
We have one. We have one from a listener. This is, and please afterwards go watch this documentary. It's fabulous.
Good. Good
This is from listener Noah Stevens. Thank you, Noah. Thank you. Robert Osborne is the photographer. I've never heard of Robert Osborne, but a portrait photographer. And this particular documentary shows him in situ taking photographs of some Native Americans. I would say there's like a Western bent to his work. I don't know if that's the entirety of his work, but certainly that's what you get from this documentary. What is it? 27 minutes on YouTube.
Yep.
Do you need the link? It's
I have it. Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was really good. And a technical perspective, again, it's hard to tell on YouTube because compression and all that, but he's just skirting that line of too sharp, you know, where you can see every pore of the skin. What's that guy? Lee, he photographs a lot of homeless, people. Lee, I can't think of his name now.
I don't know
anyway, black and white photographer. But this is really interesting. And I appreciated how he was kind of setting a stage, and maybe we can talk about it a little more next week if you watch it, but sure. He kind of gives some direction at his sittings, especially with the Native American folks. You know, you're on a plane, you're reeling from defending your people. I want you to kind of think about, you know, what that feels like and really trying to capture something.
I have feelings of that about that.
Let's jump in with that one.
Next time.
Okay. When you've had a chance to kind of check it out. But
yeah.
Really good photography. Looks like he's got a pretty extensive collection of YouTube videos himself on documenting some of his process.
You're right, though. There is a certain sort of over clarity. Not clarity. It's like, but it, you know, it's got that super sharpened look to it. Yeah.
And I don't know if that's, we're seeing, I'd like to see a print in person rather than seeing it, you know, sharpened for screen.
Well, I feel like they probably very three dimensional, you know, in that way.
I just pasted in his URL if you need the website.
Yep.
But beautiful work. You know, I love his toning. It's got kind of a little warmth to it. So I don't know if that's, you know, it's not selenium and it's not quite sepia.
Well, he's almost certainly doing it digitally, right?
Yeah. But I really like it. I like the work a lot. You know, Western photography, either the people or the land is dear to my heart. So I like this.
Robert Osborne,
Montana Cowboys.
I was going to say he's in Montana.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Oh, the one with the Montana Cowboys, third one in, the guy with the accordion and the what is that a dobro guitar he's got next to him?
Oh, yeah, like
some
that
sort
one?
Of steel. Yeah, I like that a lot.
I like the guy to the left who looks like Sam Neill not Sam Neill. Sam Neill?
Oh, no.
Sam. How's that guy's name?
Uh-oh.
Apparently somebody's trying to buzz my door.
Sam.
The hell's that guy's name?
Sam Shepard. Sam.
No.
You know, from Roadhouse.
Yes. Hey, Kimosabe.
And in The Dude, he was in,
come on.
Oh.
Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott. Oh, that's it. That's it.
Oh, for God's sakes. Hold on.
Hello?
That'll be fun to edit out.
What am I, your doorman?
You know what the problem is? That we live in a building where...
Just leave it in. It's fine.
Yeah, there are four apartments. And so if somebody doesn't answer, they just buzz all of them until somebody lets them in the vestibule to drop something off.
Annoying.
And guess who's home a lot?
How much time do I get?
Yeah, good times.
Good times.
All right. Well, then we'll come back to Robert Osborne's photographer subject conversation.
Yeah, the direction or non-direction for subjects, as the case may be. Yeah, cool.
You got anything else?
No.
By the way, no one got back to me with a friends and family discount for Apple. I'm very disappointed.
Oh, really?
Podcast at ontakingpictures.com.
Yeah, come on. Somebody's got to work there. You excited for WWDC? Speaking of which, real quick.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
I think the RAM stuff is going to really, you know, they're kind of setting the stage for everything costing at least $100 to $200 more rather than, you know, my opinion, suck it up, Apple. Absorb the losses for the short term because you're going to make long-term customers on the back of it. Get people into the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Don't raise the price of the Mini from $599 to $799 because you got hit with $4,299 more in RAM fees per unit. Stop it. Absorb it. Show some goodwill to your customers. Let them be long-term customers and make it up later through additional products and services.
Did you hear that, Tim Apple? Advice.
It's not Tim anymore. It's John Ternus.
John Ternus. Well, not yet. Not until September, I think, officially.
Mm. Yeah, it just, you know, it feels goofy to go, oh, well, we're giving you more RAM, so we're going to adjust it. So wait a minute. RAM is more expensive, so you're going to give me the same price of, you're going to give me the same RAM that used to cost $200 for $100, but you're going to blame the price increase on RAM increases? Wait a minute. How does that work?
I think what it is right now, they have good deals on the purchase price of the, I think their wholesale price on SSDs and RAM chips was say a 2-year deal. And so they're still getting it for the cheap price. But once those deals expire and they got to redo it. And if the cost triples, you know, there's no way they're not going to raise prices. It's just, it's why I was thinking about getting a new laptop and I'm still thinking about getting a new laptop. I just can't quite justify
it. I just, Mac Rumors this morning Amazon has M5 MacBook Airs for $899, the 13-inch with 512.
That's a good price.
It's $200 off. If you're looking for one, you know, $200 is a pretty good deal.
Although my young friend just bought a new M5 Pro with 48 gigs of RAM and 2 terabytes. Sweet computer.
Yeah, but then you're stuck with Tahoe.
What, you don't think you're stuck with Tahoe with this last one?
With any of them, yeah. Unless you find an M4, you're going to be stuck with Tahoe.
Well, you know, the other thing about Tahoe is Tahoe now shows... Did we discuss this last time? Tahoe now shows Fuji compressed raw images in Finder.
Yes.
Which is actually, a reason to...
If they could fix the interface issues, which I'm hoping that they'll iron out.
I think they're going to clean those up. I have not installed Tahoe. I'm still running whatever the last one was. Sequoia.
Yeah.
I'm still running Sequoia. 15.7.7.
Same. Yeah, same.
But yes, I guess we'll find out next week.
Yeah.
All right. We will discuss.
All right, gang. Thanks for being here.
Yep. We will talk to you all soon.
All right. See you.
Bye.
Say, though I know your words will lay me out.
this way. Say what you want to say. I know what you will say. We'll leave.